The fourth case this morning, Craig versus Rich Township High School.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Stephen Richards, and I represent the plaintiff appellant in this case, Brian Craig. I should begin by saying that, unlike as in some of the previous arguments, Brian Craig never touched anybody. He never cursed anybody out. He never engaged in any such activity. What did he do? He wrote a book. And the other point about this case is that it comes not like on the other cases after extensive fact-finding. It comes on a 12B6 motion for motion to dismiss. So, in other words, what Judge Bucklow did was she looked at the pleadings, she looked at the book, she looked at the charges, and she said that there was no case. And that is absolutely wrong. I should also note parenthetically that a concession that this was not the right way to do about it comes in the appellee's brief, because obviously a 12B6 motion should be limited to the pleadings. That's what it's about. But in their brief, they mention an interview, and they cite to the internet. It was an interview that took place after Mr. Craig was discharged. So I did not move to strike that reference just because I believe that no court would be so daft as to give it any credence on a 12B6 appeal. But I think it is an inherent confession of the weakness of their position. This case, though, does raise an important issue because it comes at the intersection of two sets of law. One is the Pickering-Connick line of cases, which basically deal with instances where the employee engages in work-related speech. And the question that we want to look at in those cases, particularly after Connick, is the employee acting from some personal interest? Or, as in Pickering, is the employee acting as a citizen and just happening to comment on matters that involve their employment as well? And that's the balancing that goes on there. But the situation is wholly different when you have a case like this, and as in NTU, where the question is, can the employer restrict the employee's First Amendment rights on matters which are unrelated to their employment or largely related to unrelated to their employment? In this particular case, Mr. Craig self-published a book. It wasn't addressed to the students. It was addressed to the general public. It was published on the internet. Now, obviously, there can be criticisms of the book as a book. As Oscar Wilde said, there are no moral or immoral books, only well or badly written ones. It could be argued this book is immoral. It could be argued it's badly written. It cannot be argued that it is not protected by the First Amendment. It doesn't contain profanity. It contains advice. Is the advice dumb at points? Sure. Is the advice wise at points? Sure. But if one were to evaluate every book that was published and say, as in fact what they say is that one has to be comparable to Hawthorne, Melville, or other government employees in terms of their works in order to get protection, then the First Amendment would have no meaning. The idea of the First Amendment is we don't essentially look at the value of speech, or we don't look at how it affects people. Only if there's a compelling interest do we hold that it can be prescribed and that you can be fired for writing or saying something. In this particular case, Brian Craig wrote something. According to the pleadings, he was clearly fired for writing the book. Almost all the allegations involved writing the book. And those are part of the pleadings. This case does not a case which could go out on a 12B6 motion. Now, on summary judgment, there may be other issues raised as to whether this was disruptive, it did reflect on his character, was it the real reason he was fired, or was he fired for giving the book to some people in return for money on property? Those are all interesting questions, but they're not 12B6 questions.
But the book came into the record by being attached to the response to the 12B6 motion, didn't it?
It did.
And within the book, the plaintiff indicates that part of his background for reaching these peculiar observations was his experience as a counselor, and dealing with parents and things of that nature. And wasn't there also a foreword written by a fellow teacher?
There was a foreword written by a fellow teacher, who, by the way, was not fired for writing the foreword. And she was also the editor of the book, and it helped him get it published. But the school was never identified in the book at all. There's no mention of Rich. And the dedication was a series of dedications, as most beginning authors do. He had five of them, I think. One was to his mother, another was to his wife, the other was to his important women in his life, and the last was to his students. So the only connection, tenuous connection, is one, he says he's a guidance counselor but doesn't give it to school. He also gives all of his resume, including other places he's worked at as a counselor. He never says that the advice is designed for young people. He never says the advice is designed for minors. It's clear that in the book he's giving advice about sexual matters, marital matters, and by the way, the character assassination wreaked upon the book unfairly by the appellees is outrageous. One of the things that they kept saying is that he advised his parent or husbands to lie to their wives. If you look at the passage, he's saying that a husband should lie to his wife about her hairstyle and how he notices it and how much she likes it and how good her cooking is. There's nothing about adultery. There's no condemnation of adultery or anything of the sort. If there are things that disagree with people about it, that's what the First Amendment is all about. People say offensive things. It wasn't profanity. It wasn't pornography. It wasn't hate speech in any conceivable way. Judge Bucklow's ruling, I would suggest, is political correctness gone amok. One of the things she said was, this book, he could be fired because the book discriminated against women. But the book mostly praises women and says how smarter they are than men and says they should get it over on men in all sorts of different ways because they're wiser, etc.
But he goes into descriptions of physical characteristics of women, right?
Right, which is dumb. And that's the thing to be said about it. It's not pornography. It's not hate speech. It's dumb. And the First Amendment protects speech that is stupid. The First Amendment in Rankin protected somebody saying that Ronald Reagan should be assassinated. That was utterly idiotic, I would suggest. If we focus on whether it's a good or a bad book, Brian Craig might lose. The reviewers might be in his corner. But if we focus on the First Amendment and his First Amendment rights, he must win at this stage, at the 12B6 stage. Your Honors, I would suggest that if you read the case law, we are at a critical point in this particular case because this is not Pickering Connie. It's not employment-related speech. It's largely unrelated to his employment. Therefore, you have to decide whether this NTU applies. NTU was a motion, prior restraint, so there are some other considerations there. But in NTU, no one said we're going to look at each particular speech that somebody gives, we're going to go to some federal employee, go to his lecture on black history, and see if there's something we dislike. Basically, it said, as long as you're doing it apart from your job, this is something you're doing for money because you want to educate people, you want to engage in this activity, you can engage in it without reprisal. In this particular case, Brian Craig was fired for writing a book, and that the First Amendment does not permit. Thank you.
Please, the court. Good morning, Your Honors. Paulette Petretti on behalf of School District 227 and the named board members and administrators. I'd first like to address a few of the points that Mr. Richards brought up. 12B6, we recently had, or not too recently, but Roe versus the City of San Diego was a 12B6, where the Supreme Court upheld that, and Judge Bucklow relied on Roe quite heavily, and we believe that it is an analysis that can be directly applied here. The reference to the Internet that we put in our brief, we do believe that that is authorized. There is case law. We cited the Johnny Cochran case, not for the truth of the matter asserted, but that there was widespread publicity. And that issue goes to, if this court goes to the balancing test under Pickering, that is a question of law, whether this book interfered with the business operations of the school district and whether, in fact, the school district's interests outweighed Mr. Craig's interests. Mr. Craig was not terminated for writing a book. He was terminated for writing this particular book, It's Her Fault, which the very premise of the book, and if you had a chance to read the book, rests on Mr. Craig giving advice to women that in order to get what you want out of your man, you need to use sex. And that is essentially what he covers throughout the 44 pages in the book. It's, if you don't give your man what he wants, well, if he strays, guess what? It's her fault. This is a premise that the school district does not condone. School district has a mission to serve the youth in its boundaries, 14 to 18-year-olds, and Mr. Craig is a guidance counselor, was a guidance counselor at the school district. As he set out in his book, in the dedication, he dedicates the book, in addition to his wife and his mother, to his students. And what does he say to his students? Keep listening and learning. The implication there is that he wants them to read this book. And
there is a difference between whether you're going to hire him knowing that he wrote this book, or whether he wrote the book while he's employed.
Well, the fact that his duties and responsibilities as a guidance counselor are basically what he utilized as qualifications for writing this book.
Did he also serve as coach for the women's varsity, JV, and freshman basketball team?
Yes, he did. And he was also a student council sponsor. These are all positions of being a role model. When the district heard that he wrote a book, I mean, the first reaction is, you wrote a book, great, what's it about? Counseling, terrific. You know, they were happy about it. And then the principal called the superintendent and said, you got to read this book. And therein, you know, lies the rub. I mean, this...
Would the school district, I assume the school district would not have had or would have had less of a problem with the book if he had written it under a pseudonym and made no mention of his work as a guidance counselor.
Well, that could be, Your Honor. Unfortunately, in this day and age, you know, with it's so easy to find out who's who and what's what, he clearly provided information in his book that it took a nanosecond for people to find out who it was and what school. And that was the point of the Internet. It was so widespread. And he published it right before school started. Exactly, Your Honor. But right before school, he one of the other charges was he always had 10 copies with him, and he was selling it at school, and he was promoting it. That was against the rules on solicitation, also the rules, as you pointed out, Your Honor, of getting other teachers involved in something that is not in accordance with the policies and procedures. Your Honor, you brought up, you know, Mr. Craig's description of female anatomy Mr. Richard says it's not pornographic, but we maintain it is pornographic. He describes in great detail variations on the vaginas of black women, white women, Asian women, Latino women. And if that were, if you had photographs of this and had underneath each of the picture, white woman, black woman, that would be pornographic. And I don't think it's any different in this situation. Clearly, the book has pornography in it, and it has obscenities in it. He uses colloquialisms for the male and female sexual organs that are inappropriate. The problem here is not only would he be across the table from children giving counseling, the problem is he also, there's an undercurrent of allowing abuse of women in this book. He talks and he admits, you know, in all of the women that he has to have one that loves him more than he loves her, who loves his dirty drawls, as he puts it. And she's the one with a low self-esteem. And he tells, you know, he says, fellas, you guys go for the one with the low esteem. You know, that you can get what you want out of her. As we all know, high school students come in all shapes and sizes. And in the charges, in the correspondence that's part of this record, the superintendent said, we're getting concerns from parents. And they were. I don't want my daughter sitting across from him. He talks about, you know, he has a weakness and he goes into a trance.
Well, to the extent it would have been disruptive, could that be reached on a 12B6?
Yes, Your Honor.
How so?
The Pickering test, which if you get to that, Judge Bucklow found that this wasn't a matter of public concern. But even if she had, to go to the next step, the Pickering test, that also is a matter of law, just like determining whether it's a matter of public concern. Both that and whether or not the school district's interests outweigh Mr. Craig's interests, that is to be reached as a matter of law by this court. So that easily could be reached on a 12B6. We maintain also, Mr. Craig had a few pages in there, and Judge Bucklow gave deference that you know, he does thinly disguise what he's talking about as male-female relationships. But under Waters v. Churchill, the court was very, very clear that even if there may be some protected speech, it still cannot insulate an individual from discipline if they have unprotected speech. So to the extent that there is anything in the book, that does not insulate Mr. Craig from discipline in this case. And the other, I think, good ruling from Waters v. Churchill is that they use the expression, once something is out there, expression is out there that's harmful or that's disruptive, you can't wipe the slate clean. And that really is a phrase that I think applies here. Once it was out there, there is no way you could wipe the slate clean. His views were out there. The school district could not reconcile putting a guidance counselor out there to guide and counsel children. The teachers, public school teachers, are known. They have a responsibility to be role models, to imbue students with morals. I mean, that's right in the school code. And in fact, in Illinois, they serve as in loco parentis. They're in the place of the parents. And this, the speech here was really unconscionable. And Mr. Craig, you know, continues to say it's a matter of public concern.
And then, specifically in the book, because it was attached as part of the 12B6 motion, it is clear there was very graphic language, acceptance of infidelity. And there were other topics that clearly not subject to debate, because one might debate whether it's, well, is it pornographic, those images or whatever. There were specific things that, is that your position?
Yes, Your Honor, and I'm glad you brought that up. Thank you. He encouraged promiscuity before marriage. This is in direct contravention of the health education program at the school district. They teach, you know, safe sex. They teach relationships that are based on, you know, mutual feelings. But that, he clearly, you know, encouraged promiscuity. Even putting aside how the girls could feel belittled by reading this, the boys, too. He's not a good role model for boys. That's not what they hope to encourage in the youth of America. Thank you, Your Honors, and we would request that you affirm Judge Bucklow's opinion.
Thank you, Counsel. How much time, sir?
Quickly, Your Honor. On the issue of disruptiveness, I guess the position taken by the appellee is that when they decide a 12B6 motion and decide something is disruptive by looking at something on the Internet that was not in the pleadings, that, frankly, is ridiculous, and you should reject it. As to the book, he says to my students and clients, and to one of, actually, I count 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 dedications. There's a reference. There's his entire career is laid out, including his other counseling. And there's no identification of Kylie Gregor or who she is, so there's no association with the school at all. There may be factual issues as to whether this was disruptive and whether the interests outweighed his, but I would suggest to you on a 12B6 motion, even though this is a legal question, at the 12B6 stage, every inference has to be taken in favor of Mr. Craig and against the school board. And if the school board has to bring in things that are not in the pleadings in order to make their case, they have no case on this issue, and the ruling should be reversed. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Thanks to both counsel in this case. We'll move to the fifth case.